Okay, most of you are here, right? So let me talk a little bit about how what projects, just update on what different people are doing. So far, you guys want to do something on Icarus, right? Okay. And have you decided to take on that, or are you still thinking about it? Huh? What? You're thinking of taking that? I cannot hear. Tell me louder. You think it's too simple to prove? Okay. Okay. So I put up. Oh, this one is not there. So I put up a page on. On the project from. So one particular pointer I have is this is the conference on multi-agent systems. And there's a proceedings for this year here, and all the previous proceedings are available in the ACM Digital Library, which is accessible from ASU. Okay? So another venue, or a particular direction that I am not teaching, as I'm not very much teaching, but I would like to explore, and which should be good projects, is to go from a single agent to multiple agents. So currently we have one agent and have the environment, right? In some sense we are saying everything is adversary and the rest is all clubbed together as the environment. But if there are multiple agents who want to cooperatively achieve a goal, and there are not that many great good theories, so I would like you to explore, go backwards to see what papers are there, and based on the ideas of in the class, and I'm going to repeat, if we can extend some of our work here to the multiple agent domain. Okay? So for people who are struggling with ideas, this is something I'm very interested in, and this is something you can explore. So let me repeat again. Our formalization in this class has been mostly about an agent in a world, and so we just kind of say this is the agent, one agent, and there's the environment. Okay? So agent is doing, and we are doing most of the things with respect to one agent, like the accent language A. And what are the three things we are doing? We are doing expressing the how the world will change if an accent is performed. How the objects in the world are related. Now, how the objects in the world are related doesn't matter one agent or multiple agents. But if we have multiple agents, then they could, means we'll have more actions, and maybe they can do some actions cooperatively, like one person cannot do, but together some people can do. Okay? So there so that is one, then we have goals, and we have goals about, that is the how do we specify goals, and in one class Ji Cheng talked about it, and maybe in that direction, or maybe when we have, which we have not covered, maybe we'll cover a little bit when we talk about Icarus, about the control structure. So how does all these things change when we are thinking going from single agent to multiple agents? Okay, so that is a direction I'm interested in. Among all the projects discussions that we had, yours, I want you to keep there. I think what you we discussed last time, that's an innovative direction, and we should stay there. Okay, so you don't need to worry. Of course, you can explore, but I think that's a great idea. Nobody has done that, so it'd be interesting to explore. But from the emails I've gotten from the rest, you want to explore Icarus, that's fine. For the rest, this might be a good direction. And if you study hard, and maybe, there's a conference deadline, this conference proceedings, the next conference deadline is, I think, end of this month. So let's see if you come up with some great ideas quickly. Okay. It's just a challenge. I never know. You have to challenge people sometimes. So that is the one thing lacking in this course. Is we spend a lot of the time kind of being complete about single agents, and now is the time to take it to multiple agents. And I glanced through some of the proceedings, and people have not done that great a job. So it's good to look at it, some papers, and see how we can, the way we are very proceeding very systematically, how we can take it from one agent to multiple agents. Okay. So that's something I'm interested in, but there are other ideas in that page, which if you want to pursue, I mean, other ideas are discussed here, you can look at them. And no, whatever you do, I need a 2 to 3 page proposal on this on October 16th. I said 15th, so 16th is the day we have class, so October 16th. And I put some intermediate deadlines so you can chart your progress. Okay, otherwise, so there's a phase 2 November 9th, and then the final thing is due December 7th. And any questions? So what I'm asking you is, if you buy this idea of exploring things in a multi-agent, or if you're looking for ideas, this is the main agents conference. Okay, there's a link there, and you can look at what people are looking at, what people are publishing there, and see if you get some ideas from that. You want to discuss them, so you have a, I mean, you can read abstracts. If you get excited, read more and discuss with me to see if you get a good topic. But again, you don't have to do this. I'm just giving you, because a lot of you are coming to me and saying, okay, I need some ideas what to pursue, so I'm giving you a direction to where you can find ideas. The best direction is to look at recently published papers. And especially, I think that the work on single agents is quite well done. So there's not very many, you might think some of them, because I haven't covered them in the class, like in the class I'm covering, say, true or false. And you might think that, okay, I might need values of, like, color can be red, blue, green, I can have multiple values. Now, there are papers on that. Or there has to be continuous values. There are papers on that. Or you might want to think of that the effect of an action might be probabilistic. There are papers on that. So many of the traditional extensions of this A are there. The one which is missing is going from single agent to multiple agent. Okay? And the particular part in multiple agent which is hard is trying to do something cooperatively, and the issue of knowledge, I mean, what one agent knows, another agent knows, how one agent can tell another agent. So some of these aspects are harder. But I have not been keeping up with the multi-agent literature that much, because I was focusing on having everything fixed first on the single agent. So in that sense, I would like you to look, and there might be interesting stuff, or there might, my guess is the people in that community are not as formal or as systematic as we are doing in the class. So there will be basic ideas there, some ideas, but not well done. And that's where you can jump in, and from what you've learned in the class, the techniques, you can make them more formal. This is a direction, means you don't have to do that, you can suggest me other things. But if you are struggling for topics, this is a topic of interest for me. And the theorem means if it is not proven anywhere, means if it is not proven, then it's fine. It is fine. Yeah, if it's not proven. If it's proven, find somewhere, then it's not as interesting. But if it's not proven, then I think it would be a nice result. So, it's good to do it. Yeah, you can ask. You can ask. You can mention that I suggested that you ask him or. The person who would know is Vladimir, or I mean, Hudson Turner is the other person who might know. I should know. It's okay. It's been 10 years, so I'm not keeping up exactly. But I kind of thinking back, I don't see why it was not proven. It's supposed to be something should have been proven. I cannot remember why somebody did not prove that. Okay, but you can pick other things then. That is fine. Okay. So you understand? So means the people who are struggling with topics, so you know where to look for, right? So I, for example, was looking now today earlier. So I found about a paper called "Reasoning About Action and Cooperation." Now this could be a paper. This was in 2006 at the conference of that, and I mean this could provide a starting point to do it a better job of it. So, but the fun part is many of these papers you have to read and understand. I mean, it's not going to be. You have to spend time reading and understanding it completely, okay? And then you might have to read what they refer to. But that's what I want. I want you to be able to, if you want to go in that direction, I want you to be able to read the literature, find out where you are, and proceed further. And in this conference there are other kind of papers too. There are agent implementations too. So you can take an agent implementation and do it in a formal way that we are doing it. Okay, that's also possible. I mean, that's another part of the project that I described here, is we would like to extend language A or some, or for a particular application, or to extend language for goals, or to develop algorithms for particular tasks of agents, or to develop an agent in a particular domain. So you can look at these papers and you can systematically develop an agent. I mean, there are agents described there, but they might not have done systematically as we would like. So you could say, okay, I want to design this system this agent systematically, so I will describe what the actions are, I'll describe what the goals are. That's also fine. And maybe a little bit extensive, so it's not exactly that particular agent, but a little more. Okay? So this kind of describes what the different directions, and the papers, the AMAS thing, tells you where to, that kind of gives you a state of the art in multi-agent systems. That's the agents conference, basically. Okay. But in a sense, it is good that I didn't expose you to this, because at least his idea I like very much. So it was not intentional, but by not exposing this to you, so I got some original ideas at least. Something out of the I didn't expect, so it's kind of a good idea. So his idea is what I don't think I, or I do not know if anyone has done, is to be able to somehow specify the musical notes as a goal formula. So in music, when somebody is playing a music, it's again a sequence of states. Can think of if you can quantize it, or whatever the word is. So it's a sequence of states, and so can I specify it as a goal? Can I, even if I do it properly, can I actually make plans? It has all kinds of implications. I specify this as my goal, and then there's some constraints, and maybe I can even design or plan for a particular good music or soothing music. So that's kind of the thing he had hinted, and I think that's an interesting direction. Nobody I know of has done something like that. So you can think of something completely out of the blue, that's fine too. Okay? The theme is actions, change, sequence of states, trajectories, control. So anywhere, any kind of domain where these things are involved, that's fine. I And the basic theme is that the world is changing, accidents happen, accidents change the world. Often we would like to somehow control how the world evolves. So these are kind of the basic themes. Knowledge representation about state of the how do I represent the knowledge about the world? Okay, so here that's what we are discussing. The static causal laws were the ones which are good for representing the state of the world. Something like static causal. We need the causality. The propositional logic is not that good. So something static causal laws and the version of logic programs is very much matches the static causal laws kind of syntax. Okay. The other thing I wanted to discuss further is those two classes that I was not here. How did you, how much you understood and how was it? I mean, look at the slides. Okay, so I want to go over them one more time. So this is the time for you to ask me questions, okay? I want to you about those things you don't understand. Okay? So I'll go over the slides and so which one of these you had a harder time understanding? Actually, for I mean, both of these you need homework to get expertise, so I'll have to give you homework. So, okay, let me start with this one. So the idea here is that when we have the agent has incomplete knowledge about a world, okay, there could be two different kind of actions. So there is a notion of the world. So here an agent needs to open a high security door. Initially the door is not open, not jammed, so not open. Not jammed. And it's unknown whether the door is locked or unlocked. So this is the initial state, initial knowledge about this domain. Not open and not jammed and unknown locked. Okay? And it says the action push door makes the door open if it is not jammed and not locked. And however, if the door is locked, then this action makes it jammed, makes the lock jammed. To change the status of the door from locked to unlocked or vice versa, the agent can perform the action flip lock. The agent can also perform the action sense lock to detect whether the door is locked or not. And the first part is, can we represent this in A? And this is the representation. So locked, jammed, and open. Push door causes open if not locked and not jammed. Push door causes jammed if locked. Flip lock causes locked if not locked. Flip lock causes not locked if locked. And the notion of sensing is not there in A. So we'll see what kind of problem we might face. Initially, the state is initially not jammed and not open. So it's an incomplete state. We have no idea about whether it's locked or not. And the idea, question is, can we write a plan which will get us to make the door open? That's what we want, right? And So somebody will write a plan saying, if not locked, then push door, else flip lock and push door. And the point is, I cannot execute this plan. It says, if not locked, then do this, else this, but I'm an agent and I have no idea it's locked or not. So although this sounds reasonable, I really cannot execute it. See, I go slow, I make sure you understand it. So if you did not understand that time, or you don't understand now, it's time to ask. Okay? And the correct plan is here, is you should sense lock intuitively, sense it, and then once you sense it, you know it's locked or not locked. Then you can execute synchro. If it's not locked, then just push it. If it is locked, then just flip and then push it. Okay? Yes. No, we kind of we were dealing with or in the examples that we dealt with, we assume that we have complete knowledge about it, but that's not necessarily the case. No, we haven't gone to the language yet. In A itself, there is no guarantee that this has to be complete. We just dealt with those examples. In fact, in A itself, we talked about that if the information is incomplete, then we'll have multiple models, and that made some of the reasoning parts complex. Okay, if it was complete information, they only in planning we did. So if you remember when I talked about planning and complexity, I told you that if the initial state is complete, then planning was NP complete, planning with polynomial length plan. But if the initial state is not, if it is incomplete, then it goes to the next level. I told you this sigma 2 and pi 2, that sigma 2 p complete. So we did discuss the incomplete domain, but that, so the point is, we did discuss the incomplete domain, but at that time, as this example is, if I tell you, okay, this is, the D there is that it's in the language A. But if I give this to a planner and say, okay, find me a plan where it's initially not jammed, not open, the planner will say, I cannot find it. There is no plan. Because the plan, even if you give the language of, there is no sequence of action which will take you from the state, from what you know, not jammed, not open, and take you to the state where it's open. Okay? In A, the plan was a sequence of actions, right? So if you know that not jam, not open, so there are two possible states, not jam, not open and locked, and not jam, not open and not locked, right? Now you cannot find, the key is you cannot find a sequence of action which apply, if you apply to both of them, you will reach your goal. Okay? So if you have given this to a regular planner, this is called conformant planner, like you are looking for sequence of action. If you are looking for a conformant plan, you will not find one. There doesn't exist one. So you say, okay, maybe I will allow conditional plans, so I will allow if-then statements. And this one seemingly looks good until you figure out, can I execute this? If it's not locked, then I just push it. If it is locked, then I'll flip and then push it, right? Sounds very reasonable, except that I don't know if it's locked or not, so I cannot execute it. So, in other words, when you have incomplete information, you cannot do planning for certain goals unless you have some sensing actions that can give you more information to help you plan. Okay? If you have initial state complete, then you find the plan if one exists. If it is incomplete, then you have multiple initial states, and if you are lucky, the same sequence might work in all of them, and that's called conformant planning. But if you are unlucky, there might not be a single sequence which will work in all of them. So now you have to distinguish between, you have to figure out where I am so that I can apply the right sequence. Now to distinguish between these states, possible states, you need some kind of sensing to tell you where you are. Okay. So that was this example. And so this was actually a part of the thesis of the person who presented his advisor when he was doing thesis with me. So this was a big part of his thesis, is to formulate this language and provide semantics, and then it's a big paper, big in the sense of size, about 70 pages in the AI journal, I think in early 2001 or something. So in the language AK, a simple one, we just add one more thing, saying an action A determines F. And it's different from causes. Causes means makes F true. Determines means after you execute A, the agent will know whether F is true or not. It does not change the value of F. It's like sensing. A senses F. It sends, finds out if F is true or not. Okay? Am I giving you additional information, helps you understand better, or you knew all this? You're fine. More or less understood it, fine. So, okay. So I can go faster if you understand it. So intuitively this is, I mean, you understand the intuition that, okay, we have an action which can determine the value of a fluent, which the agent did not know before. So here the agent doesn't know if it's locked or not. So if there's an action which can determine if it's locked or not, then you do that action, then you'll find that out. So now you have these two kind of actions, and the key thing question is now, so what is a state now? Because we are talking about states and transitions, right? State, you do an action, and you go to the next state. So now we have two kinds of actions. One kind of action changes the world. Another kind of action gives you knowledge about the world. Now, what is this transition? How, I mean, actions are supposed to take you from one state to another. Now, what kind of state is it when I do this action A determines F? Or if I do this action where senses F, what kind of state it is, and how do I transition? So now I have to distinguish between the physical states and my mental or my knowledge about the state. Okay? So, I mean, previously we had only physical state. So now we have to worry about that, since sensing actions don't do anything to physical state, the pure sensing actions, they change the mental knowledge. So we have to have a different notion of a mental state or a knowledge state. Okay? And philosophers, this is the part he missed is in my earlier slides. He did a little bit, but not very much. So there is a lot of papers about, a lot of work about knowledge. Knowledge in the sense, not knowledge representation kind knowledge, but it's like the state of the world, what is the state, and what is the knowledge of an agent about the world. Okay? And in those domains, there's a modal logic are used, and a modal operator called K is used. K, A, the F means I know that F is true. But the agent knows that F is true. And the K, and this modal logic, there are actually books about modal logic. And in fact, temporal logic is a kind of modal logic too. Like when you have always and eventually, this again another modal operator. So modal logic are kind of important. Like logic, then this next step, the modal logic, are very important and studied for a long time by philosophers. So when you say A determines F, one can say that what A basically does is A basically causes no F or no not F. Okay, it causes to the. So when I start dealing with K is the knowledge, so it basically causes this formula to be true. That's what causes means, right? Something causes something, some formula or some true and true true. So A basically, if it is A determines F, is basically intuitive meaning is that A will cause, make this thing true. Either you know F is true or you know not F is true. When you're thinking about multi-agents, actually, when you start thinking of multi-agents, so then you can have things like, say, K1F. That means agent 1 knows F. You can have agent 2 knows that agent 1 knows that F. They can tell you. In fact, let me show you an example. So there are interesting problems in your, let me see. Card agent. So I'm going to my old slide that I had that he did not present. So, yeah, this is a story. You can find this kind of stories. A certain king wishes to test his three wise men. So read it. Let me turn off the light. Okay, I'm really better. So you might have seen these kind of puzzles, right? He arranges them in a circle so that they can see and hear each other and tell them that he will put a white or black spot on each of their foreheads, but that at least one spot will be white. In fact, all three spots are white. He then repeatedly asks them, do you know the color of his spot? What do they answer? And the solution is that answer no the first two times the question is asked, and answer yes thereafter. I mean, you have these kind of puzzles of basically where you reason about what the other person knows, and then you based on what the other person knows, because here they say the king just told them that he'll put a white but at least one spot will be white. So that is the knowledge they have, and based on what the other person says, so they think, okay, this is what the other person knows, and they reason about that, how what the other person knows, and ultimately they figure out they know the color of their spot. So there are many examples like this which can be formalized if you start using the notion of K1 and K2 and have the appropriate semantics. So this example was given basically saying there are lots of issues with this knowledge. In the distributed system, this notion of knowledge of who knows what is kind of very important. It's not something we're going to study that much. We kind of take a simple version of it. But while you're looking for your project, that might be an interesting direction to see, look at. Okay. There are various theories of knowledge, and in some theories of knowledge that's possible, but in most theories of knowledge that's not allowed. And I will tell you what I mean by these theories of knowledge. Okay. So this is kind of a brief history of behind. So there are lots of philosophers who have thought about this kind of knowledge. Okay. And what they came out, a semantics that is used for various formulations of knowledge is called Kripke models or Kripke semantics. And in the Kripke semantics, a model has three parts. S, small s, is a physical state. Okay, capital S you can think of is a set of possible worlds, set of states. And R is an accessibility relation from one state to another. Okay. So S is a single state, big S is a set of states, and R is an accessible relation saying that from this state, so one meaning can be that meaning of this accessibility relation is that if you are in this state, then you might mistake it for this state. So if you're in this state, there are five different things you can mistake into. By mistake think that you are in those states. So this is a mathematical or logical technique of giving semantics to theories of knowledge. And in case of temporal logic, this accessibility relation is, if you're in this state, then what is the next state, that's only that is accessible. If it is just a linear temporal logic. Another the accessibility is that if you're in this state, and if an axiom can take you to another state, then that becomes an accessible state. So it's a general theory of knowledge where it says, okay, we have three things. S is a state, capital S is a set of states, and R is an accessibility relation. And from this, you can encode, so there's an entailment saying S, the second entailment, it says SSR entails KP if P is true in all the states which are accessible from S. That means you know P, because no matter which one you might mistake, and it's true in all of them. So obviously you know by now know P. So that's kind of the semantics that is used, that if P is true in all S prime, where SS prime belongs to R, that means S prime is accessible by this relation R, then you say that this model entails knows P. And so depending on what properties this R has, there are many different modal logics. And for example, this R can be, like it's a relation, it can be reflexive, symmetric, transitive, there are various such relations. And if it is reflexive, symmetric, and transitive, then what we have is a logic whose name is S5, which has these properties, and it's called actually KT45. You have these properties, and what are those properties is very interesting. It says the second one, T for example, says if you know alpha, it implies that alpha is true. So that's the question you're asking. If you know something, it has to be true. So there might be some logic which does not have this. And then another one, the four says, if you know alpha, then you know that you know alpha. And the third, fifth says, if you don't know alpha, then you know that you don't know alpha. And the first one says, if you know alpha, and if you know alpha implies beta, then you know that you know beta. And people study different variations of it, and what property this satisfies, what property that satisfies. There are books about it. And we kind of assume that this is kind of a good logic where you have all these four, this S5 logic. And in this S5 logic, you can simplify this Kripke notation of SSR. You can just ignore R, basically saying that the capital S, everything in that state is accessible to each other. So it makes life simpler. So you have less things to worry about. So in S5, is basically corresponds to where R is reflexive, symmetric, transitive, and that's basically saying that everything in S is two things. Was the small s belongs to the big S, and everything in S is accessible from each other. And that is where we picked up the notion of a combined state and knowledge state that he talked about. He must have talked about. That is where we picked up. And the reason this is important, the reason this slide is important, is the planning people do not think of it this way. The planning people, they do not have the semantics or the notion, so they do it slightly differently. And the reason it's good to follow this traditional approach is that now you can, if I want to have multiple agents knowing things, it can be, you can use it. What the planning people do is they just completely ignore the small s and R, they just say the big S, saying that, okay, if I don't know, like not open, not jammed, unknown, locked, it corresponds to two different states. That not open, not jammed, and locked, and not open, not jammed, and not locked. So I'm just going to deal with these two states. Now when you do an action, then you do a sensing action, the sensing action then becomes a non-determinism. Because if you sense, then you can either go to here or you can go to here. While if you do it this way, this different, you actually there's you don't have non-determinism due to sensing action. But that is not the key point. I mean, they are equivalent, except that if you follow this approach or if you know about this, then you know that you can extend this to a different. If you don't want S5, you want to have some other kind of knowledge. Some particular case, you have some other kind, then you can use this. Or if you want to have multiple agents. Okay, so if you have multiple agents, all that you need is basically instead of SSR, you need many R's. So if there are two agents, then there will be R1 and R2. And the K1P will be with respect to R1, and K2P will be with respect to R2. So let me repeat again. So this one says SSR entails nose P, so we are thinking of one agent. So now think of two agents. So if we have two agents, then we'll have SSR1R2. Okay. SSR1R2. And this one entails say K1P if P is true in all states, I'll just write in English, accessible from small s through R1. Okay? Just one step accessibility. And it enters K2P if P is true in all states accessible from S through R2. Of course, this P need not be just a single thing. This can be, I might have to deal with K1, K2P. So this might be a formula. So then I have to really write it in more general terms. So if a P is if, so you will write something like if for all S prime, SR1, S prime, capital S, R1, R2 entails P. So this is a more appropriate way. P itself can be a formula, modal formula. Then you say that this thing entails nose 1 P if for all S prime that are accessible from S through this R1. So I put S prime now here because that's my current state. S prime, this S remains the same, R1, R2 remains the same, entails P. So that's how I can understand when K1, K2, K1, K1, F is true. That means agent 1 knows that agent 2 knows that agent 1 knows that agent 1 knows that P. So it's a lot of fun stuff if you want to go into that direction. In fact, this was when I was a graduate student, I heard a professor giving lecture on this, and that's where that was, I think, the point where I decided this is fun to work on. This is a fun direction, this logic and reasoning is a fun direction to work on. Yes. Oh, the small s is the state of the world. The big s, current state of the world. In this particular S is a single possible state world. It's called a possible world because everything are possible. So this is a particular possible world which you can think is the world corresponding to the real world. The one corresponding to the real world. In that particular model. In that particular model. I cannot see that, right? How can you represent two agents' communication? Those are the kind of things. You can do it. Those are the kind of things. Actually, I would, if they are not done, I would like to explore. I don't think it's difficult. You can have an accent, and the effect of that accent would be, saying some agent telling something, then on some particular fluent. And so whatever that is in nose, this agent will become come to nose. So you have to write it that way. No, if they communicate, depends on, they might be communicating about a single fluent. They might not be communicating about everything. So it's basically what does, if S1, so you can have an action saying, agent 1 tells agent 2 about his dot in the forehead. So then what happens is after that, I mean, or whatever he knows about the forehead. So then after that, agent 1 and agent 2, assuming that agent 2 believes and incorporates it, would match with respect to that particular fluent. I mean, let's assume they are, yeah. I mean, that gives another complication, completely different. But let's assume they have a common language or same set of fluents. Right. No, but that's the interesting thing. Actually, when the first, when I was doing the first PhD, my first paper was communicating between multiple knowledge bases, and the first thing was about having different language. Having different language and having a mapping between them, and if the mappings don't match, then you'd have to kind of use a hierarchy and go up and so on. So you'll find in my website that was like 1989. So that time I lost my file, so I had a PDF of each page scanned for that paper. That's the only paper where I have the PDF scanned, because I lost the file. There's some work on that, but I mean, especially now with ontologies and so on, this is very important, like this semantic web and so on. I kind of sometimes tell I was the first one doing that in 1989 when there was no web, or there was no that notion of communicating between things. But here I think let's simplify and assume they are the same. The thing to worry about is what are the interesting actions when there are multiple agents about knowledge, and how can we express that those effects? Yes.
Maybe this sounds crazy, but why do we have assumption that agents only learn things but don't forget things? If agents have a limited capacity,
they can forget.
Actions will forget.
Yeah, so you can have a forget action.
Okay.
You can have a forget action. No, that's fine. In fact, there are examples where you actually, not just forget, you actually lose information. You can lose information. So you say no F true, and you do a non-deterministic action, and you might lose information about F. So you have your coin is head, and now you toss it. So it's no longer, after that you don't know anymore whether it's head or tails. So this, complexity-wise, these things get harder and harder. But they're really, when you want to do real reasoning, you have to outthink, and you have to know what others think, and how do I figure that out, and so on. It's kind of very interesting. If you want to read a novel about it, there is actually a Russian Jewish author called Nathan Saransky. So he was put in the Russian concentration camps, and he would make fun of his prisoners, the guards, by asking them bits and pieces of information, and the guards thinking that they're not telling him. And he would then put them together by whether they're answering or not answering, and be able to get his answers. So he describes this story, how he was able to figure out things without the guards knowing that he is actually figuring them out. It's his book, actually, Nathan Saransky. Saransky, I don't know if you have heard of him. Saransky, Sharansky. No, this is just a fun story to read. I'm just saying, this. It's a real thing. This person actually really used that skill to save his life. or to do lots of things, to stay sane, to keep his mentally active in those harsh circumstances. So it is a fun story to read. Okay. Yeah, so this is the part, he covered most of it, this is the part he missed, so you would kind of wonder why we decided to do it this way. He described this, but when he goes to this knowledge state and combined state, one would wonder why we do it this way. So a knowledge state is a set of states agents think it might be in, and a combined state is a pair where S is a state and sigma is the knowledge state. So this basically corresponds to those Kripke models where we have state and a set of states, and basically we don't need an R because everything in this sigma or the big S are related to each other, so we don't have to say it specifically. So as in S5 logic, every state is accessible from every other state in that sigma. And that's the common interpretation of knowledge, that one which people agree with, like this is a reasonable one. So what he did then is gave you then, so what are the states? So these are the real world states, like everything is false, or locked is true, or open is true, and so on. And combined states, so this basically means that the real world is probably S1, and the agent thinks it may be in S1 or S2. Okay? So that way we have both sides. So when we do an action, depending on if we are doing an action which is a real, changes the real world, it will change this. And it will change all of them actually. But if we are doing the action which changes only the knowledge, it will just change this part. So you'll see. So that's what is defined. If it is a non-sensing action, the effect of A on this combined state is, of course, instead of this S, you get to the state phi of AS, that is what will be the next state. And then for each of these states in the sigma, you apply this action A, and those are the possible states you could be in. Okay, so did you understand this thing? And so these are the two main things to understand, so we'll go slow there a little bit. These two are most important, basically, in this whole thing, whole slide. So the first one says that if I do an action which changes the world, non-sensing action, then if S is the real world, then of course you do the action, you go to phi AS. So phi is the one we did in A. Okay? And S prime, the sigma has many S primes, means many states. Now, still the agent is thinking. So if agent is thinking, I was in this, and I did this action, so I could be in phi of AS1, phi of AS2, in all those possible states. Those are my possible states. So that's what is written, saying, so instead of sigma, now you have S prime, such that S prime is equal to phi A double S prime for some S double prime belonging to sigma, assuming that A is executable, in essence, that you can do that action. Do you understand that one? Okay. So the second one is a little trickier, but the idea is that, okay, I'm doing, say, action A, which determines F, okay? Fine? Just don't look at there, just think of this. So action A determines the fluent F. That means after I do action A, I'll find out if F is true or false, right? So my current combined state is small f and sigma, okay? Now, small s is supposed to be the state of the real world, right? So after I do action A, I'll find out about F. So what happens is, from this sigma, I'll basically only keep those states which agree with this S in terms of F, because S is my real one. And so all these states in sigma, some of them F is true, some of them F is false. Now if in S F is true, then I will know F after that, right? I should know F is true, so I will only have those states from sigma where F is true. If F was false in S, then I would have those states in from sigma where F was false. And that is what is written more technically, saying if you do this transition, then the current state does not change. It means the small s remains the same because you are just doing a sensing action. And from sigma, you pick those s prime such that, so here A is supposed to be sensing Fi, or the many of these fluents. So it's written more complicated that A is sensing F1, F2, Fn. So you pick those where whatever is true in S prime, it means if Fi is in true in S prime, then Fi should be true in S. It matches. So it's written a little complicatedly. So if you write an example, so suppose I have S here, and say I have say S1, and I have say S1, S2, S3, S4, S5. And I do action A, which determines F. Okay. Now let's assume that F is true here. F is true here. F is true here. Not F. Not F. F. So what happens is A determines F, and A is true here. So in the resulting state, I'll just have S1. And only S1, S2, and S5. Because after I do this, I know F. So I cannot have not F, those states where not F is true. So I'll just have S1. So my, because after this, I know about F. I still have, I might have some, I mean, if G is true, G is false here, I would not know about G. But at least about F, I know completely that F is true. If F was false here for a by chance, okay, if this was the case, not F, and say, let me put this, instead of S1, so let me write, say, S2, suppose it was S2. So S2, so if I was doing S2 and this thing, and F is, of course, S, say, 3, which has not F, then if I do action A here, then I'm going to get S3, because that was S3, that does not change. And I would get only where S3 and S4. Okay. So this is what is written quite complicatedly there. So the if and only if is saying, because otherwise you have to say two different times. You have to say if F is true in S prime, I mean, you want to say both F and not F, so if and only if takes care of these two conditions. Okay? No, it's a definition, it's not. So you think of this as saying that this whole thing you can think of as saying S prime and S agree on F. That means they have the same F value. Either true or false, they have the both of them. That is what is said in more complicated manner. I mean, of course, this is not a logical sentence. It says agree is something you have to define again. And we define states by saying what is true in them. So that's kind of a mathematical thing, but the intuitive notion is basically saying S and S prime, they agree on F, which you understand now, right? That means they either have both F true or they either have both F false. If they agree on F, then you pick those. So here, which ones agree with S1? S1, S2, and S5 agree on S1. So that's why I picked them. While here, this is not F, so S3 and S4 agree on S, agree with S3 on S, not F. So I picked those. Yes. In any of these things, unless the what is S prime? Could be S prime belongs to sigma. No, I don't know if it is anything. Then Yeah, I don't think that should be that one. Because S prime is there. Not matter. There. So this is, yeah, a good point. This has no meaning. I wonder if we make those kind of state. Yeah, I don't have this executed. Yeah, he put this extra. So homework is coming. I haven't looked at it, so I'm going to look at these things and see which one I want you to do. So I haven't decided yet. Okay. So that was the main thing, and then he ran it on examples and a summary. No, I don't see any meaning of that. Let me go back. This one, right? The second one. So it's saying, I mean, S prime is these things, right? And A is executable in these S prime. To me, it would be meaning that I'm not really in here. I'm only, this is the real world. So it being executable here doesn't quite make sense. This is my real world. These are the worlds I'm thinking I'm in. So, and I'm going to select a subset of it where these two agree. If my A is executable, so the executability here. Because I'm not going from that world anywhere. If it's a physical world, from that S prime, I'm not really executing A in that S prime. I'm executing A in respect to this whole thing. Depends on what action. If it's a sensing action.
S should come from sigma.
S is always in sigma. That's part of it. So S is always part of sigma in this, because we are assuming the S5. So that's the requirement.
Yes, we require executable.
Yes, that is A has to be executable in S. But whether A has to be executable in all the S primes that we want to pick, that must, this makes sense. Say it again.
It makes no sense. We consider those things from sigma that A is not executable.
That means. We cannot sense in there. No, those are the possible worlds. So, let me think. I'll have to check. But this, my reaction is not there, but I'll have to check my paper what we have there. But usually sensing actions is in suitableness. Suitableness fine. Yeah, this notion of actually executability of sensing actions is a little more complicated notion. I mean that we actually took part of it, we dropped some of it, but you have to, I mean, there are certain things which have to be what happens is, so it's very interesting actually. So what will happen is you get to know, if you do that, you get to know some extra information indirectly that A does not give you by sense. I mean, if A determines F, say, right? And in some of those S's where so there's a problem there. So the problem that happens is, I don't remember, is say, so suppose A determines F, okay? Now in this S, and so you put conditions saying that A is executable if G is true, okay? Now in some of these S's where G is not true, now you're going to throw away, so it might happen that you're going to find the value of G also. In other words, you're going backwards, like A, you might be able to find, while A is supposed to determine F, by the executability condition you might be able to find, because you are throwing out things that are not executable, you might be able to find some other values. Now whether that is reasonable or not, there are questions there, that while determining this, if you find out something else, when it is reasonable and when it is not. Yeah, you'll know. In the
by the execution
of it. So yes. So it's more like. I now remember something else. So actually, somebody else. If you keep track of what you cannot execute, then you'll find some other information too. There is a paper you might check by a guy called Lobo, and they try to do something. It's not executability exactly. Like, okay, now I remember. So the part we skipped on sensing actions is we have A determines F, so we allow actually executability conditions that when A is executable, or what we do not allow and what causes problem is something similar to the, if you say A determines F if, like the way you have A causes F if things, like the conditional effect, that is what actually causes problem, not if you just say executable and not executable, now remember. So that is what causes the problem. If you have A determines F if, and capturing the semantics of that and the meaning, that creates a problem. The executability is fine. Okay. Good, I'm happy you're paying attention and asking good questions. Okay, so this was about this one. So Ji Cheng had very elaborate slides. So for people who do not like, or who like LaTeX, actually this is a very good package of using LaTeX and do very nice things, animations, I mean some kind of animations and color and stuff, and get PDF. So this is a PDF file made out of LaTeX. He just overuses it, but so we might have to do this a little more of this. But the idea is that in the language A, when we had goals, right, our goals, if you remember, or the queries were F after A1 to AN, right? So it was basically just finding if F is true at the end of doing a sequence of actions. What often we need, or what often our goals may involve, not just reaching some state, but properties of the trajectory. So that was the example. I mean, you can say that go to room 5, but don't get hit on the way. So while you want to at the end be at room 5, but while you're doing it, you don't want to be hit. Okay, so there are reasonable goals, and it's, many goals are just, means here all of them have actually go to room 5, but there can be goals saying just wander around but don't hit anyone. There can be goals which don't say anything about what is you have to, don't have to reach a state, you just continue wandering around and not hit anyone. So you can have a robot whose job is to kind of there's no fixed goal, it's continuously making something true, and not just like go to room 5. There's no achievement, it's a continuous thing. Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you the history a little bit. There's 2-3 minutes. So in programming languages, the temporal logic was actually the couple of guys who developed temporal logics. Like one guy is Amir Nouely. He got a Turing Award for developing temporal logic. So it's a very important, again, notion in computer science. I mean, he was not using AI. Temporal logics were used to specify properties of programs. So you want to say, what does my program do? And sometimes programs achieve something, but there are programs which keep running. Many programs which keep running, and they satisfy certain, they basically, given certain input, they give certain output or behave certain way. So properties of programs were specified using temporal logic. They still work on that, a lot of work. What AI adds to it is more fun stuff, like try your best. So you don't tell a regular program to try your best, but you can tell a robot in Moon, I mean you don't have control, or Mars, to try its best to do something. Try your best to move that thing. Move the rock, or get out of the way, or get, try your best to get out of that hole you are in. Okay, so there are many kinds of goals. We found that the existing temporal logics, one is called linear temporal logic, and then there is branching time temporal logic. So LTL is the one which we discussed, and there are branching time temporal logics called CTL star and CTL. These are the more common ones. And they existed. So when we started expressing goals, we came across some very interesting examples like try your best. And so that is where we tried to figure out how do we represent these goals in some kind of a logic. And that's the research field. I mean, Jicheng figured out some ways to do those, and that is one part of his research. And recently we are working on when you give a robot a goal, you might want to change the goal. So we want to work on some kind of a way to revise goals in a nice way. We don't want to say, okay, forget about what I told you before and just start again. But because you have told things to the robot, and you might want to say, just change a little bit and modify this. So you want to do minor changes to the goal you have asked the robot, not completely ignore everything and then start from again. And so we are working on languages for specifying such goals. And so that is another direction of this agent, is to be able to specify what you want from the agent. And this particular slide, I will go over it a little more. it was about the linear temporal logic, the oldest one, very well understood how to use it. And it happens to be a modal logic also. It has these modal operators always in the future. I mean, there are many kind of linear logics, linear temporal logics. This is one of them, which is called future LTL, which is eventually always until those are operators. And they're modal operators. And in fact, you can give them semantics using Kripke semantics also. It's just that it's simpler to think of another way, but the Kripke semantics also applicable. You just define the accessibility relation in a different way. Okay? So I think we covered, or you have a, so here, if you look at agent papers and you find new interesting goals and you want to represent them and cannot, it's not, you can verify with me that it's not easily representable with me or Ji Cheng, then you can pursue that also. Or I can give you certain papers which Ji Cheng is not looking at, some particular kind of goals which you might want to represent, and that would be interesting too. Okay, so that's another direction. Today my goal was to give you project directions and go over these things. So that's another direction you can. I have certain papers which Ji Cheng is not looking at, so you can look at those things and specify, see if you can somehow incorporate such goals. Or if you look at the proceedings and come up with there are interesting goals mentioned there, and you can check with me if they are expressible in the existing logics or not. And if not, if you want to develop new logics, that will be fine too. Okay. So, or actually, the more direction also here, Ji Cheng is not also doing that much. Is most of these goals in programs assume that you know all the states. So when you have incomplete information and you have incomplete information, okay, these knowledge states, then you might have different kind of temporal logics. So for example, you might have goals which mix temporal and knowledge together. Example of that is you might want to design a robot which should, which is basically, you give them a soul that don't ever lose track of this gate. So it's not that the robot is supposed to open the gate or close the gate, it just has to know the value of the gate, whether it's true or false, at all times. So it's a temporal goal about knowledge operate, knowledge. So there is some work, but a more interesting work on that would be also useful. I have slides on that, but I have done a little bit of that, but there's no proper paper on that, which mixes knowledge and temporal goals together. So I think I gave you many ideas and places to look at. So hopefully you'll have better, well, next time you'll have better suggestions for your project. Okay, see you Thursday.